Welcome to another edition of your favorite sporting podcast, your favorite hockey podcast. The name says it all. Hockey, the podcast with myself, Derek Albert. But of course, I'm as always joined by the main man and my partner in crime, Tyron Jabu Barnard. And we welcome you to another edition. Now, I tell you what, we've traveled the world on this show. In fact, just the most recent episode, we went over to New Zealand to chat to goal-scoring extraordinaire Greg Nickel. We've been to the States, we've been to the UK, we've spent a bit of time in the Netherlands, but I can safely say, Tyron, that this time around we're dealing with a country that has yet to be featured on the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, good day, Derek. What a great story we're going to get to share with you today. Some of you may have heard it, but if you haven't, you're about to have your mind blown by what hockey can do. And yeah, Derek, a country that I don't think I've ever been to. I've been to their neighbours. I know I've never been there. I don't think you've ever been there either.
No, I haven't. And I would love to, because it's got a rich wildlife history, most notably gorillas. Don't know if you know much about that. Diane Fossey spent a lot of time there, if I'm not mistaken. But, of course, we're not dealing about wildlife. We're dealing about hockey.
Well, I mean, hockey is filled with wildlife if you've ever been to a fine session. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, East Africa in itself is a special place to go. And the country of Uganda. You know, Derek, there was once a very pertinent story when Retief Hoorsen actually went to Uganda. I don't know if I've ever told you this story. But the president of Uganda phoned Retief and said, "Retief, will you please come and see us?" And Retief flew over. He got there. And the president said, "Retief, I want you to build us a golf course." And Retief said, thank you, but I've never built a golf course before. That's not my business. Why would you choose me?" And the president looked at him and said, "Because, Retief, what's good for the goose is good for Uganda." Yes, I'm here on my free charge.
Oh, man. And I was so excited for that story as well. I should have known better. But that's a cracker, Ty. Well done. And it can only get better from here, the show. That's the great news. But, I mean, the cat's out of the bag massively. Of course, we are speaking about the country Uganda. Indirectly so, because we are, in fact, dealing with the South African. But I'm giving too much away. Ty, tell us more before introducing our special guest of this episode.
Yeah, during the South African Namibia series played last year, I got to meet Sean Lobsher and we became social media buddies. And yeah, I did not know this at the time, but Sean was in the process of organizing a very, very cool trip. He joined the Uganda national men's and women's side for a period of about a month, and he'll tell us more about that, just before the Omicron virus variant was identified, helping them prepare for the African Cup of Nations underway now in Ghana. So, yeah, Sean, I mean, I don't know enough of the story, or I won't do enough justice to the story to talk too much about it. That's why you're here. Welcome to Hockey the Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, Derek. Thank you, Tyron. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head about what hockey can do and how we can meet other people. And it is one of those stories where I was on my FIH level 3 and the Ugandan men's coach, Vincent Kasasa, a wonderful man, was on it with me. And we were talking and, you know, I said, "Geez, one day I'd love to come and see how things work up there." And it sort of ended like that. And we chatted on WhatsApp and we spoke about hockey. And then, yeah, I got an email to say, "Please, we're going into camp. Will you come and join us?" And I spoke to my wife. I think the first thing she said, "Is it safe?" I just said yes. An incredible experience. Not a country that I think would have been on my list of places to visit, but a place that I definitely will go back to again, not just for hockey. beautiful, beautiful country. So that really is how I got there.
Sean, we're going to take it down and break it down a little bit, but first and foremost, traveling around the world can sometimes be challenging. Traveling within Africa can be extremely challenging. I've been fortunate enough to see, I think it's about 10 African countries, and I've seen the bustling Lagos, but I've also seen Mwanza in the middle of Tanzania, where an airport is smaller than my lounge. And, I mean, you get invited and you're told, yes, you know, we want you. Come to Uganda. Your wife says it's safe. You don't really know how safe it is. Obviously, East Africa is fairly safe. But, I mean, the logistics of a trip like this, that in itself must have been a fairly big challenge.
Yeah, so I think, firstly, once again, I was very blessed. I stayed with the coach, which was phenomenal. You know, if we start breaking down logistics, you know, that gave me transport to from the airport to from the Astro and a roof over my head. Also, you know, there I was with the people, not just stuck in a hotel. I was Northcliffe High School where I teach. And so I'm the head of hockey there, and they straight away said, you know what, Sean, this is an opportunity that you can't turn down. So them saying that, and from there, logistically, it was, you know, within sort of a month, I had to get everything done. But I found the Ugandan government was really, really jacked. So silly things like a visa. Once you'd paid, I think I had it within 2 days. And I had to get some injections and stuff. And I think where the most stress came in was the COVID tests. I think you're always just a little bit nervous that you are going to test positive, but plenty of flights out. Took an Ethiopian Airlines, had a little layover in Ethiopia, which was wonderful to just be there for a bit. And then, yeah, the Ugandan airport is not big, but it's probably Lanseria size, and friendly people, friendly staff. So once I was there, it's Africa. Africa and friendly people and, I don't know if that sort of answers it. Yeah. But I have been very blessed along the way with just people helping and people saying yes, like go, this is something that you need to do. Don't turn down the opportunity. My wife said it. I mean, I missed her birthday. I missed my one daughter's birthday, unfortunately. And I think that is the nature of international sports, unfortunately, sometimes. But even they were like, yo, you can't miss this opportunity. And I'm very grateful that I didn't.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you speak about international sport, because you're a high school hockey coach in Johannesburg, and the opportunity presented itself. And just to clarify exactly with the logistics, how did it all work? Because, so you got your visa, you sorted out your passport, off you hopped on a plane. What was the planning in your head? Because you said, okay, I'm going to land. And I take it all this took place in Kampala, capital of Uganda. And,
yes.
And you landed and you got picked up. How much knowledge did you have prior about what your role would be and how busy you would be and what exactly you'd be needed to do? What did you know about the Ugandan team? Was it flying by the seat of your pants, or did you do quite a bit of research prior? And I just want to imagine you landing in this smallish airport in pretty much literally the middle of Africa. and then just starting this whole new role. Not permanently, of course, but for a decent amount of time.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was seats of my pants, just sort of that Richard Branson way of you might not be qualified, but just don't say no. I actually had a chat with Coach Polo about it before I left, and it was exactly that. So I felt underprepared. Where I did do my research is they had played a series against the Ugandan side had finally, after many years, got out and played a series against Kenya in March, which was on Watch Hockey. And I must have watched those three games between seven and 10 times. And, you know, Tyron, you were at Northcliffe with multiple camera angles and everything. This was maybe two cameras sort of at halfway. And that's what I did. And I contacted the coach. Okay, who's this playing here? And, who's that in the goals, and what's the thinking here and there? And that I watched the ladies' games the same amount. I unfortunately didn't have access to the ladies' coach's number at that stage. So through the men's coach, asked the same questions, and from there formulated a rough idea of what really worked and what really didn't work in that series. So from three games, 30 times watching it, what worked, what didn't work, who more or less players are, some of those players are playing in Italy in the second division, some are playing in the first division in Italy, what the coach, more or less how he wanted to run the sessions, how he wanted to work with me. Did he want me to sit and observe? Did he want me to be hands-on and take over? Are we going to work together? So that was basically all the information I had. Did I know exactly where I was staying? No. All I knew, the coach said to me is, you're going to stay at my house and I'm going to feed you and we're going to go to the Astro. I'll fetch you from the airport. I giggled when I was leaving because, you know, as I was coming through the airport, they call white people Mzungus there. And he's, you know, one day I said to him, how did you know it was me? And he said, Sean, you were the only Mzungu. And I went, oh yeah. And he waved with one of the players and we got in the car and we got home. And the next day we started planning. And yeah, I'm not saying it was easy. We bumped heads. I think it's very different bringing two different systems and personalities. And we were in each other's faces 24 hours a day. But a wonderful man who's taught me a lot about myself. But yeah, logistically, I think a lot of it was seats of my pants, and off the knowledge I had from the Watch Hockey website. I even emailed them to say, please guys, can you just let me download it so that I don't have to stop start on the app. Let me just download it so I can watch it freely and break it down. But yeah, that's basically the planning that we had done around it. It was really seat of our pants, get it. It was happening quickly. I think I got the email on the 12th of October to say, please come, and camp was starting on the 12th of November. So it was just, oh, okay, let's make it happen.
Before we get into the details of once you landed in Kampala and started taking on the coaching role, Did you chat to the coach? I know you did prior, but how did it come to be that he sought you out to come in and help his country's cause when it comes to hockey?
Yeah, I don't think we ever really... on this course, I think we had to do one group task together, and I think I like the way he thinks. I don't know if he necessarily likes the way I think, but I imagine he does, because we're doing it. But I love the way he thought, and I can clearly remember just speaking to him for days. You know, so we did it online, and we had access to each other's number, and for days we would just talk hockey, not talk Ugandan hockey or South African hockey. We spoke about hockey and development of hockey and ideas around hockey, and that, I think, was where this almost mutual respect for each other came, that, oh, like, this man is thousands of kilometers away, still African. By that stage, I can't think whether it was pre-Olympics or post-Olympics. I think it was pre-Olympics. So, you know, there was the hype of the Olympics coming up. And we were just two people across the world talking hockey. And I think we just clicked on a hockey level that, yo, this guy speaks my language when it comes to hockey. And from there, I think we continue talking more as friends. So what do you do? What's your day job? And I think that's where it developed to the point of him saying, you know what, come over, let's see what happens. I mean, he went to the lengths of going to the general secretary and the president of the Ugandan Hockey Association to get me the letters and the documents needed to get over. So, yeah, I think I'm a second, you know, I've been talking to him today as the guys are going into their final preparation. So I'm going to send him a message and find out, like, why me? Because, I mean, you sit on these courses and there's guys that are directors of hockey at Dutch clubs. And, you know, I've sat on my level two with Scott Tupper, the Canadian men's captain, and Pakistan players. And so to be honest, I don't really know, but I think it's possibly that.
Yeah, Sean, I mean, look, it's such an incredible story, but, you know, one of the things people often don't think, South Africans often look at the game of hockey and we say, oh, we're so hard done by. We have tons of Astros, we have tons of opportunity. You know, hard done by is not really what we are, yeah, compared to the Europeans. But, you know, take us through a little bit of when you arrived. I mean, as much as you would have been expecting it, how much of a culture shock was it in terms of the facilities and the lay of the land?
Yeah, I think what I found to start off straight away, I mean, at Northcliffe, and we are by no means a massive hockey school, but there we've got our own water-based Astro, 23 hockey sides, and that's what I manage. That's part of just my daily job. Uganda has 17 male and female senior sides in the whole country. So, I mean, if we take just the Southerns Premier League, where there's all these teams across the men and the ladies, and that goes down to 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th division, stuff like that. They've got their league, and they've got, I think, 8 men's sides and 9 ladies' sides. So that's the whole of Ugandan senior hockey. They have one Astro in the whole country. They have got one sand-based Astro at Lugogo Sports Complex. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful, beautiful complex. And you realize, I think for me, yeah, I realize just how privileged we are here. From a people point of view, I realized, they are the most friendly, giving people. They're kind and caring, but they carry like a sadness in them, and that's what we as the men really, really try to harness, is this, to give the people of Uganda hope. You know, poverty is a real thing there. It's not. We look at South Africa and the unemployment. There, a family of four needs a dollar a day to survive. And that's what lots of them live off of. So we really try to, that was a big thing for me. And once I saw it and realized it, that's what we've been talking to the men about the whole time, is we're going to go to Ghana and we're going to give people hope. We're going to give people hope that there's something else.
No, Sean, I was going to say, I mean, it's inspiring stuff to hear, and it's great to see, you know, the East African region really does have a culture that is fairly strong in terms of hockey. It's maybe the delivery of excellence that hasn't always been there. Mm. Going in there, and I mean, here in South Africa, you'll be surrounded by, you mentioned Coach Polo earlier, you're surrounded by, here in Gauteng, you've got Inky, you've got Gareth Ewing, you've got Sihle and Thuli, you've got, you know, the list of coaches, Bunta McDade was here. I mean, it's a number of top, top quality coaches. And I think sometimes we take for granted just how privileged we are. Did you experience the players and the coaches almost trying to suck in everything you were saying? And did you feel like they really embraced and appreciated your presence there?
Yeah, I think that was the most incredible thing, is Coach Kasasa Vincent, the men's coach, sort of helped get the culture right really early in the men's camp. And the men adopted this thing of it's business time. And I mean, we would train, I think it was, I must just work it out. It was 4 days on, 2 days off. 4 days on, 2 days off, 4 hours a day. They've been doing that since beginning of November. But where I really saw incredible things, and you know, you talk about Sikle and Gareth, and those guys are guys that here in South Africa we actually have access to. And I mean, Gareth worked with me. He was the head of hockey at Northcliffe maybe 7 or 8 years ago. That's where I first met him. And, you know, in Uganda, they don't have that there yet. And these guys just ate it up. The ladies as well. You know, I've been talking a lot about the men. The ladies as well. Just the technical points that just lift the game, they were all game for. The coaches, the goalkeeper coach there, you know, I think we would WhatsApp each other till 10, 11 at night discussing why we were doing things and what we were going to do the next day and how we're going to improve things. And Vincent and myself would talk and draw pictures and analyze. And the men, you know, you'd pull him aside and say, what are we thinking? What do we want to do here? And that was where I think we saw the greatest growth is that, okay, you know what? We're here to, I think we were always there to keep Ugandan hockey, Ugandan hockey. I can't go over and in a month change it to Dutch hockey or South African hockey or anything else. It doesn't work. But just to perfect that, and I think these guys understood, appreciated it, and just absolutely flew with this idea. The ladies were taking a little bit longer, and that's fine. It's Rome wasn't built in a day. I cannot describe the growth that I saw in players and coaches adequately. It was a life-changing experience.
On the flip side, Sean, and I can completely understand that they would have taken all the information in and thrived in it throughout the course of your stay. But initially, was that the case? Or was it there's some form of trepidation amongst the players, both men and women, thinking to themselves, who's this foreigner coming in who now wants to teach us how to play? Or did you have to buy their, not buy their trust, but earn their trust? Or were they in from the get-go?
I think we always have to earn trust. Without sounding cliche, I can go from any club here to another club. And I think there's always just that, okay, this oak is here for us. And I think players, whether they're 5 years old through to national level, they want to know that you're there for them, which I genuinely was. I think where there were more issues, and the coach won't mind me saying it, we've worked it out, but there was more issues between myself and the coach. You know, I think it's always weird having someone else coming in directly into your space and asking difficult questions. And I'm the first to admit that I did ask difficult questions. Why are we doing this? Can we not do this better? Should we not be focusing on this rather than this? And I think maybe 2 or 3 days between him and myself, and we had to sort it out because we lived together, which is a good thing. Myself, Vincent, Moses, the ladies coach, we more butted heads about, these ideas are weird. And I think maybe I had to tone it back a bit, even sometimes. And I think after a couple of days, 2-3 days of us sort of questioning each other and finding a common ground there, it was far easier than, you know, I was working with the players anyway. They were working. They are so, so dead keen on Africa Cup that I think they could have coached themselves and they would have worked hard. But I think once we'd sorted out our issues as coaching staff, and that was not, you know, it's not on the turf, that was behind the scenes, then things really started flowing. And, you know, I explained to them, I'm not here forever. I was there for 3 weeks, I think, cut a little bit short by Omicron, but my job was to almost impart as much knowledge to the coaches, because the coaches are what's going to change every session. You know, we got the players involved. The players were there. They were passionate. They'd experienced some different things that they'd never seen before. But if the coach then just goes backwards or stagnates, that's where, you know, then growth's hindered. So I think that was more where we really, you know, we really had a couple of words. they call it Ugandan patience. It's just very, it's very relaxed. And I've got Joburg patience, which is not very relaxed. And we've, I also had to learn some Ugandan patience quickly. And yeah, it changed me because I also had to learn and adapt on the fly. And I think it was better for the players in the long run.
Barrier wise and boundary wise, what did you encounter? I can imagine a different skill set that you would have encountered down this side. And there's no question that their fitness was certainly up there. But also from a language point of view, I know that English is one of the official languages, but communication, was that an issue at all?
Some of the guys were really, really, they really struggled with the English. Some of them, yeah, I didn't hear them speak Lugandan once. So the English was perfect for some of them. It would sort of get slightly lost in translation. And, you know, Vincent, and I can't stop singing the man's praises. He then would translate to them. He was right there with me. It was never, though, really a massive boundary. Thank goodness. And I think that really made life a lot easier. I was really blown away from a skill set point of view, and I still don't know quite how they get it right, but these players have every trick in the book. You ask them to hit a backhand upright, they'll hit it. Maybe they've got to fix a couple of things here and there, but we all do. They had it all. And I think the key for me, there's a, on social media, there's a picture of me and a little boy. His name was Ali. He didn't have shoes. But every day he would come to the Astro and I'd give him my stick. And I said to him the one day I met him the first time and I said to him, listen, do you want to play hockey? So he said, yeah. I said, well, cool. You're going to be my assistant coach. Because I really do believe in we've got to give back in the youth of the future, and you know, without sounding like a complete hippie, but I do believe it. And you know, this kid Ali in 4 years' time is playing national hockey. I said to him, "Oh, like, cool. Here's a ball. Here's my stick." Thinking, you know, this oak has never done anything, and I mean, he was absolutely roofing it on the backhand, hitting some orcs, and then he was throwing overheads. And I said to him, but where does this come from? And he said, no, whenever they practice and whenever they're here, I'm here. And that seems to be, so they've started a lot of academies. There's a lot of Dutch players helping and Italian players helping. From a skill set point of view, they are right there. I think it's where the barrier is just getting some new ideas. You know, and Tyron mentioned guys like Sikle and guys like Gareth and Inky, and I mean, you go down to the Cape with Andy and there's so many. There are just there's too many coaches to even name. They are communicating outside the country and going, oh, that is an interesting concept. That is an interesting idea. And Uganda sat, I think the last time they went to an Africa Cup was 98, I think. I had it somewhere. But it was in the 90s. That was the last time they went. And they basically haven't done anything really. They played a bit of in East Africa, but they haven't really done anything since. And that, I think it just stagnated things a bit, that they stayed on their own little island. And once they realized, yo, okay, we can do what we want and this is how we want to play. And this is how other teams are going to play. Then they really came alive. But skill-wise, yeah, there was it grew every day. I absolutely loved it. By the end, we were sitting on about 20 kids that would come down to the turf, and they'd be collecting balls for the players and setting up cones. But you give them their sticks, and man alive, from sort of 8 years old through to 14, these oaks could play hockey. If I got to the point that I actually said to the director of sports, I said, I wish we could somehow bring these kids over to South Africa just for a education. Hockey-wise, they'd get a bursary at most schools here in Joburg. But, you know, education-wise, I'd love to have them here.
Yeah, Sean. I'm so excited to see the teams over now in Ghana. You know, you mentioned Omnicrom, and was it ever in the plans for you to join the team in Accra for the African Cup of Nations?
I think it would be wrong of me to say that I didn't really hope to go over. And it didn't say my prayers at night to go over. I think it's an experience, you know, that very few people on earth get to experience. And I really, the talk was there, but it was never ever really set in stone. We'd looked at logistics of getting me from South Africa to Accra. It's really expensive. So then we looked at the logistics of, do I go back to Uganda and then fly out with the men? And then, you know, Omnicrom was also a different baby, and it just for a African federation, and they just, like, you know, it's just like every other federation, with money and stuff like that. It would have been difficult for me to go, and that's fine. You know, I literally talking to the coach, they were testing today, so we're waiting for results to see, and just praying. You know, you really never know. We can be as safe as we want to be. It was happening and it wasn't happening. And I think in the end, the right call with Omnicrom, because I don't think anyone really knew. I was meant to be in Uganda for longer, and Mwabi got hold of me in Uganda to say, Sean, please, they are, flights are being shut down left, right, and center. Let's get you back into South Africa. And I mean, he sat on the phone, you know, he's an absolute hero. He sat on the phone while I sat at the airport, and it was like the amazing race. And I got the next flight out at, I think, 2:30 on a Saturday morning back into South Africa, just because we were scared. And I think it's the same thing going there. I really wish with all my heart and soul, but that's fine. There'll be other tournaments. And hopefully I can join up with the team then.
Yeah, obviously you're not going, but, following closely. Uganda are the bottom ranked team, but that comes with great opportunity in the current rankings. Any result will get you massive points, and, you know, the men currently ranked 91 could see a jump as high as 60 with the right result here. The women obviously in the 70s looking for that. Do you think, I mean, having been there, do you think we're in store for a possible shock in Accra and a win or two, or just ruffling a few feathers? Let's leave that question there.
I think when we looked at it, and I don't think there's a secret to it. You know, I'm not going to give the tactically and stuff like that. What we spoke a lot about is we want to Ghana became our final, and Ghana's first up. So Ghana became our final. We felt, as much as it's a really, really tough game, and we will have to be at our absolute best, there's a real feeling of, this is a game, if we do the right things, to backtrack, no one deserves to win or lose. A result is never guaranteed. And I think, with the FIH coming out today with South Africa, Germany's game being the second most voted for game of the year, on paper, Germany was going to win that game, but there was always that feeling, and you have to show up and you have to do the right things to get a result. And I think the men really believe, okay, cool. This is a game that they want to go out and they really want to attack. And I think it's 100% the right call there. And I think they could, I'll never say we could win, but we really could put Ghana under a little bit of pressure. I know they're quite a physical side, so we've looked at how to negate a couple of things. And we've put some plans in place there, slightly different formations, different starting lineups. We've looked at a couple of things there. South Africa was a game that I was very surprised with the men. They really took on this thing of, okay, South Africa's the team we want to beat. Let's focus. I love the attitude. We're going to focus our attention on beating the best. We're going to beat South Africa. I heard the defenders when we were working with them saying, okay, guys, we're up against Mustafa Dayan and Billy. How are we as defenders going to nullify that? And I think what South Africa gave the Ugandan men was, they'd seen them play at the Olympics, so they started to really formulate some sort of idea. And the goal there is, I think, for us to get a result there is really, really difficult. But the goal was to really give it as good a showing as possible, to not allow an absolute walkover. I know when you go into a tournament and especially in a group that is tight. So if I look at like the JHL and stuff, there's certain games that you target because you need a goal difference. And I think the Ugandan men are saying, we won't allow that to happen. That's not how we're going to function. And they want to really focus on that. Whether they'll win, and I'm sorry for all the Ugandans, that's going to be really tough. That will be really tough. And then I think it's Nigeria, if I'm not mistaken, and we were confident about that. So plans in place there to really put them under a little bit more pressure, show a little bit more attacking prowess, that Ugandan flair that we worked on. So that's the men's side. I think, them playing against Kenya again would be, if they find them somewhere in the tournament, a wonderful grudge match after beating them in the series last year. I know the two coaches there have been talking, and no side is the same, so that will be interesting. I think Namibia will be a tough ask as well, and Egypt always brings a top quality side with them. But that's the men's group, how we focus there. The ladies group was a different, that's a different baby, because they've got South Africa and then they've got Namibia. And, that was always going to be who we felt was the two toughest sides. And I think, just in terms of over a period of time where the ladies find themselves in their training and in their high performance setup compared to the men. The ladies are going to have a tougher time than the men. They just are a younger side, less experienced. But, you know, it's tournament hockey, and anything can happen. There's players, both men's and ladies, that I think can really work some magic. And it takes one or two moments of brilliance, and the whole game is turned upside down. But I think ladies wise, it will be a tough ask. The men have really put in a lot of thinking, and yeah, it will be weird to watch South Africa and Uganda play. I'll probably wear my Ugandan shirts and my South African shorts, because yeah, my heart's with both of them.
Sean, finally, from my side, regular listeners of the show will know that I can't finish an episode without squeezing in a question about some form of travel. And was it all work during your stay in Kampala, or did you get to see a little bit of the city or the country, the many national parks around, Lake Victoria, etc.?
I think to be fair, it was majority work. I didn't get to go to any of the national parks. You know, I would have loved to have been on the equator. I did have a wonderful meal on the edge of Lake Victoria where the coach took me, and it's a fresh fish market. I didn't understand what was going on, and he was pointing at fish, and I thought we were going to go home and eat fish. And he said, come, let's go up and get drinks. So we went up, and the next thing, the fish that he chose, they had cooked and they bought it, and we sat out on like a deck overlooking Lake Victoria, which was absolutely, absolutely beautiful. The day that I left, I was meant to go out. Weatherhead Hockey Club had done the double this year in the cup in the league, so they had organized a massive party to celebrate out on an island on Lake Victoria, which I was meant to go to. You know, unfortunately, that I had to miss because of Omicron, but it is what it is. I'll go join them next time. The one day we went to visit the coach's grand, which is, I don't know, that for me was really cool and a really special moment. And we drove out to West Uganda, and that was just I think it was possibly the most homesick I've been. Kampala is very built up. And once we got out to West Uganda, it was rolling hills and, you know, a little village here. And then you carry on driving and the little village, it reminded me very much of Pongola in KZN. And it was beautiful. And he said to me, oh, you know, next time you come, we'll just carry on driving west. And he's got friends that do this and this. So I'm hoping I get another invite. You know, I'll chat to the general secretary after Africa Cup, and we'll see if hopefully I can do it again and get more involved and help out. And then, you know, the players were adamant that I had to bring my wife and kids, and because you know, we're all Ugandan now. We're all Ugandan. And then I'll definitely make sure that I go for an extra week and go actually explore how beautiful it is. But I think the little bit that I did see has made me list to get back. They're catching, they call them the border borders. They're the motorbike taxis. You know, in Tanzania, they're called the piki pikis. But the border borders, you pay maybe 20 Rand and you say, please drop me off there, and he just drops you off there. And when it's open road, it's beautiful, but at some intersections there's maybe 150 all going in different directions. So that was an experience. The markets, but yeah, no real traveling.
Ah, well, it's still a hell of a lot more than Ty and I have seen when it comes to that part of the world. Sean, it's been so great chatting to you. It's been so refreshing, so different to our other guests, because a lot of the time we go in knowing a bit more about our subject, a bit more about the background, etc. And this was an education from start to finish, and I loved every single second. Congratulations on all you have achieved, and we wish Uganda the best of luck over at the Africa Cup of Nations. But more importantly, we wish you the best of luck, firstly in your role over at Northcliffe, but secondly, with your future with Uganda and perhaps some other international teams.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thank you. Yeah, it's been an honor to chat to you. I didn't think it would quite end up where it's ended up, you know. I'm absolutely blown away and absolutely honored that I'll say this, and I feel like I'm talking to you, but I know a lot of people are listening. But I can clearly remember I was exhausted. I hadn't slept, you know, for 24 hours because I had to catch a plane, and I remember crying on the flight home just out of like pride and humility, because out of the 6 billion people, to go over was just an experience, and it's something that will live with me forever. So thank you for letting me share my story, and hopefully in the years to come I can share a couple more about Ugandan hockey.
Yeah, what a great story it is, Sean. It's been inspiring to me. It's really, you know, when I started the journey with Hockey the Magazine, Hockey the Podcast, specifically Hockey the Podcast 2 years ago with Derek, 107 episodes before this, we wanted to use this platform to tell stories. And we found some incredible stories of players' careers. But this is an incredible story of the game of hockey, of the African continent, and of course of you, Sean. We commend you, we commend your family for the sacrifice, and of course we thank you for being willing to share your story, and we hope that someone out there who's listening, you know, there is no such thing as international borders stopping you from achieving your dreams and from helping others achieve theirs. I hope that from this podcast, whatever time you're listening to it, whatever platform you're listening to it on, whatever you're doing, I hope you just sit back for a second now, reflect and think, you know what, this is something I'm going to go do, this is the difference I'm going to go make, you know what, go out and do it. Sean has led by example, it's your chance to follow. Thank you very much, Sean, thank you the listeners, Hockey the Podcast, 108 episodes, and I'm moving to Zimbabwe to start a fishing farm.
Cheers, Sean. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much, James. I appreciate it.
Great stuff. And these are the stories we want to tell. And if there are anyone out there who have similar stories they would like to share with the hockey community, let us know and we'll be sure to cover them. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Hockey the Podcast. Thank you, Ty. Thank you, Sean. We'll be back soon for episode 109. Cheers.